Welcome to the third in our special series of podcasts highlighting the imprint Monkey Brain and the amazing work they do. My name is Kieran Shiak, and today I'm joined by the man pulling the strings of Monkey Brain's newest horror anthology, Boo Halloween Stories, available now on Comixology. Calamity John Morris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So I'm going to get straight into talking about Boo. The format of the comic is it's a reality show featuring a group of horror narrators, like from the old EC comics, all telling stories in an effort to win the contest. Monkey Brain seems to be really embracing the anthology format at the moment with Inkshot and recently Real West. I'm wondering how you got involved with an anthology comic for Monkey Brain. Did you say, I've got an idea, or did they say, what have you got for us?
Oh, no, I probably against their wishes, I approached Monkey Brain with the idea of relaunching Boo, because we had done it as an online collaborative project for many years during the early 2000s. And I thought, since the digital comics were making such a big impact on the market, it was a nice time to try to bring them back. So I approached Chris Roberson over at Monkey Brain directly with it.
So you've got, maybe some pun intended, a murderer's row of creators on this book. Did you just go to the people who you worked with in the past on the previous version, or how did you go about selecting the creators for the book? And if you could talk a bit about who's on it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's about 20 different creators on it. I try to drag them from different, using different criteria. So some of them, like Neil von Flew, is an old studio mate of mine. He and I used to share space on a site called apelaw.com. And Neil was working with Leonard Pierce, who's a good friend of mine and a writer, and I know that he's always interested in getting started in comics, so I approached him directly. RJ White's another longtime friend of mine who I know has had a lot of ideas about writing for comics, so I wanted to give him an intro. Other fellows like Matt Smeal and Kyle Starks, I only met through some of the ancillary projects I run. Like there's the official handbook of the Marvel Universe project, where I have independent creators recreate the entries for that book. Or I ran something a few years back called DC 52, spelled T-O-O. And it was creators coming up with their own ideas for how to relaunch the DC Universe. And so I think that's where I met Kyle Starks. I think I'd have to go back and double check. But I run a ton of these little side projects, and so I meet creators through that. And whenever somebody caught my eye, I put them on a mental checklist to come back to. There's some young creators like Carl Nelson, who is a cartoonist I met since I moved up here to Seattle, whose work I thought was absolutely brilliant. He's in the first issue, and I was really I've always wanted to work on a project with him, so I paired him up with RJ and was able to get him in the first issue of the book. It was just all over the map. A few people approached me after I started recruiting folks. They heard from friends that I was gathering artists and writers. And like Delilah Dawson is a writer with whom I had no experience before this, but she came highly recommended. I read some of her prose work, and she ended up turning in literally the most horrifying story out of the 12 that we're featuring over the 4 issues. So she was a good catch.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked with just how gruesome the comic is, because especially with the teaser trailers, it did seem quite like a lighthearted take almost on Halloween. And then you read the first issue, it's like, oh God, no.
Well, that's one of the best things about horror, is that it encompasses both the high comedy, or even, you know, slapstick comedy. By page 3, there's a bloody splat introducing you to the book, but also just like legitimate terror. I think issue 2 and issue 4 come off as the lighter ones, and issues 1 and 3 are particularly dark. I guarantee you there's a scene in issue 3 that is horrifying. It's one of the most grotesque things I've ever seen. I was so proud to put it in a comic.
Was there anything that you thought, oh no, that's too far, or was it all fair game?
There's actually one panel in the 4th issue that was a long thinker about whether I could allow it. But all of the writers, or when the cartoonists were doing both the writing and the art, were really open to feedback on what to include and what not to include. So we were able to keep away from things like truly gratuitous gore, victimization. In fact, I think you'll see in the 2nd issue in particular, we like to to switch around the idea of victimization and who's the victim and who's the predator in these scenarios. There was a general sort of PG-13 rule, which, you know, in the U.S. is our standard for gross but not terrifying films. And I think we just wanted to keep away from... I'm trying to think of how to phrase it. We, without getting too into the making of the sausage, but we tried to avoid anything that was just too predictably victimizing and tried to keep the stories a little more interesting and shocking.
Yeah, one thing I found recently is, as we go on, the stuff that we considered like terrifying and gruesome 15, 20 years ago isn't that bad, because I used to work in a cinema, and I was there when Scream 4 came out, and I thought Scream 4 was just as gruesome as all the others, but all the others were 18s, and this was a 15. So I think that's really interesting, how the shift in attitudes towards violence, because you do hear a lot of talk, especially about American audiences, being okay with as much violence as you want, but as soon as you show a bit of nudity, and then it's the other way around in Europe, apparently.
Yeah, we do have that problem here in the US. It's ridiculous. Part of it, too, is that, especially, let's say, with the Scream franchise or any kind of horror franchise, and the fact that DVDs and Blu-ray and streaming video is so common, you end up seeing the same shocking act of horror 100 times. And it stops being quite so horrifying after the third or fourth. So you're probably right that Scream 4 was just as gruesome. But, you know, we'd had 3 Screams before that. We're getting kind of used to how gruesome and victimizing it is.
With Boo, you write and draw all the framing sequences. Yes. What was the process like of designing and creating the characters? Were they from the original series back in the day, or are they completely new for the comic?
They're all mostly completely new. There's one character called the Spidery Old Hag, who is actually based on a character from, I think, the second iteration of the online collaboration back when my pal Manning Kroll and I were the only ones doing it. And her name was Mama Boo, and then I kind of reused the design a little bit for her. But the 12 participants in the reality show framing sequences are all loosely based on horror hosts, either from television, comic books, or I guess those are the only two, from television or comic.
My favorite was the Phantom Stranger one.
The Mysterious Wanderer, yes.
Yeah. And the way his speech balloons just keep going and going, and the comic just kind of leaves him to his own devices.
Yeah, it's true. That one was definitely based on the very, very early Phantom Stranger comics. I think he actually debuted back in the 50s. So he's been around for a long time, and he was perhaps the most vociferous horror host. And I admit, when I was doing my research on this and I came across him and I found myself skimming what he was saying instead of reading it, I thought that's a good gag to throw in. It's just he never shuts up.
To get off topic a bit, do you know what they're doing with the Phantom Stranger at the moment? Do you know his deal in the New 52?
I heard that he's being written by Dan Didio.
I think it's JM DeMatteis now.
Oh, is it? Oh.
But he's Judas.
Oh, is it?
Like, he's literally Judas.
They just lay it out like that, huh?
Yeah. He like, you know, his chain around his neck, those are his pieces of silver.
Or at least 3 of them. Are you familiar with the old Alan Moore take? The old Secret Origins?
No, I don't think so.
Well, actually, I'm not even sure if that was all Alan Moore. There used to be a comic back in the late 80s, early 90s called Secret Origins, and it was just them reviewing every character DC had at the time. And the Phantom Stranger Secret Origins was 4 different conflicting Secret Origins.
They've just said, yep, Judas.
That's a little boring. I liked it better when you had to... Well, I like anything better when you have to sort of make a guess instead of just having it laid out for you. That's a shame.
Yeah, I guess with the Phantom Stranger, they could always go back to it and go, nope.
Right. Well, really, they can just do that with anybody because it's comic books, and they can just ignore what they've done if they want to.
So with the narrators, did much thought go into assigning each story to a narrator or each narrator to a writer as you went?
Yeah, that actually... some of the writers requested certain narrators. Delilah Dawson wanted to use Meredith McMoonwolf. And she even wrote, usually I write the intros, but Delilah wrote the intro for Meredith, for her story in the no, the third issue. God, I'm trying to think. So I know I had one more request, and I can't remember who asked for what. But no, for the most part, I knew that every host has to narrate two for it to be even. So when I had all the story synopses, I laid it out and decided who would probably be best suited for each one.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now on Comixology, and I've noticed that I can't catch his name. I'm asking him over his name, but the very first one, he reminds me a lot of Brack from Space Ghost.
Oh, Mr. Puzzles?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Puzzles is, and I pulled off from doing this too much, but he's a sassy, gay, murderous devil puppet.
Oh, is he kind of like Saw-ish?
Saw-ish?
Like Saw, the puppet in Saw.
Oh, Saw, yeah. He's loosely inspired by Jigsaw, I suppose. I actually like, there's an old movie called Devil Doll, which is about a possessed ventriloquist dummy, which I've always loved because technically speaking, that's the least terrifying thing in the world. It's a doll that you have to carry around. But there's also an old Charlton comics horror host named Mr. Bones, who was a butler with a weird puppet face. And I loved the design on that. I think it was a Pat Boyette design, but I might be wrong. But so I ended up swiping Mr. Bones for Mr. Puzzle. So it's a little bit inspired by Saw and a little bit by the old trope of the possessed ventriloquist dummy.
So I'm guessing your favorite Batman villain is ventriloquist and Scarface.
My favorite Batman villain is the Eraser, the guy who dresses like a pencil.
Yeah, one of the things we've talked about a lot in the past few episodes with Chris Sims and Chad Bowers and Chris Roberson and Dennis Culver is writing and drawing for digital. How much thought do you put into making a comic work on both the page and on guided view?
Probably not enough. A lot of this is hands-off because I need to leave with 12 different creative teams. And, you know, this is my night job. This is not the thing that pays the bills. So I only have so much time to check in with everybody. So I can't pay a lot of attention to how everyone is putting their comics together. For me, when I was putting the framing sequences together, I was making it a point to keep the text as big as possible, ideally to avoid guided view. I was actually hoping folks could just read it. I know there's iPad minis and there's Kindle and there's a lot of very small screens. I was hoping folks did what I did and bought the cheapest off-brand biggest tablet they could find and would be able to read it about the size of a regular comic. But I guess my answer to that is I crossed my fingers and hoped.
Well, I'm looking at it now on my laptop screen. I think that's something people forget about Comixology, that you can just look at it on your computer as well as on like a iPad or a tablet. So
I know I do most of my reading on a tablet now, so I get hep to the fact that folks are using that extensively.
Yeah, I usually use my phone to read like my Monkey Brains and my Batman 66s, but every now and then I'll read it on my laptop.
Yeah, nice. Oh, the phone is. I've tried the phone before, and that was an exhausting experience.
Have you read the Batman 66 stuff with the guided view?
No, not with the guided view.
That works really well. It's not just this is the panel, this is the next panel, this is the next panel. There's color saturations and the panel will vibrate and the biffs and pows will come up. It's a really innovative use of it. I think they worked with Comixology to make it like that.
That's nice. The only thing I'd read on my phone before I gave up was Annihilation, the old Marvel miniseries.
Oh yeah, I was just about to go back to that actually because I've been reading Hickman's Fantastic Four and it's making me nostalgic for Annihilus.
It just made every issue, because you're only reading that one balloon at a time, it makes the comic feel like it's 200 pages long. But I just got tired after a while.
I think it kind of works though, because when you have something like a Monkey Rain comic where they are like 16 to 18 pages, you do really feel like you're getting your 99 cents worth when you're reading it to panel.
I'm hoping folks feel they're getting their 99 cents worth in general. But yeah, I see your point.
Well, there's three stories in this, so if someone feels cheated by this, I don't know what they're spending the money on.
I will refund the 33 cents for whatever story they didn't like. I will find them and send them 33 pennies, and that will hopefully make us even.
So were you a big horror kid? Like, were you into like UEC comics and all that sort of stuff from a young age?
Yeah, I was always a superhero guy, actually, until probably college. And I was in art school, and I was really considering a career in comics properly. And when I was analytically looking back at comic pages to use as examples or to use as studies, the best looking stuff was over in the horror books, because they were working more with mood, and they were working a lot more with lighting and shading. And because so much was dependent on surprise, I think pacing was a lot better controlled in the horror comics. So I started getting into them when I was a teenager and then a young adult.
What other big horror influences was like are there in your formative years besides from the comics?
There's Stephen King's Creepshow, which was a VHS tape I wore out. Mostly the comics. I'm actually not a horror movie guy. I hate feeling tense for 2 hours. It wears me out. I think I talked about this on Twitter, that I really loved mythology and folklore, and that stuff I could dive into for hours. So I could read, like, I had a wonderful book on the history of werewolfism in Eurasia, and it was 800 dull pages, but it was absolutely fascinating to me, because it was just literally a tract of lycanthropy from Finland down to the tip of China, and that kept me attached for hours.
Have you read Scott Snyder's American Vampire?
I'm behind on Scott Snyder. I'm supposed to pick up on him because he's been recommended to me a couple.
Yeah, I think you'd like that because it really plays with the idea of a worldwide different races of vampires. So your vampires from Europe are different from your vampires from Asia, and that's why it's called like American Vampire. It's the first example of an American vampire being a separate thing. So there's a lot of mythology to get into in it.
I'll have to check that one out. I liked Chris Roberson's Eye Zombie quite a bit.
Yeah, I was a big fan of that. It ended too soon,
Yes,
unfortunately.
it did.
So, speaking of the comics, do you have a favorite horror-themed superhero?
Anything? Oh God, actually, yeah, hundreds. As I think about it, Swamp Thing and Man Thing are both amazing. Son of Satan is possibly my favorite character. If Marvel turned around tomorrow and dropped half of its X-Men and Avengers and just started a bunch of Son of Satan themed teams, I would be delighted. Ghost Rider, I loved. I love that period of the Defenders, when David Anthony Kraft was writing, particularly, where it was so obviously like a satanic, heavy metal influenced story arc, where demons were crashing through the streets of Times Square, and that was brilliant. That's some of my favorite comics.
I'm a big fan of the Marvel Dracula, especially.
Oh, anything with Gene Colan in particular, yeah.
Yeah, and there was the really good MI13 story where it's Dracula versus Doom versus the MI13.
I loved that whole arc. I'm a Captain Britain fan from way back, because I found when I was very, very young, I was at a used bookstore, and I found the entire run of the Marvel Superheroes and Captain Britain weeklies for 10 cents an issue, and stocked up on them. And so when they did the MI13 issue, I was definitely right there. And then I loved it. I thought it was brilliantly done. It was beautifully illustrated. Good characters.
Yeah, that's another one that was too soon.
Another one too soon. I remember it wrapping up and feeling very disappointed by that.
So, speaking of your horror-themed superheroes and your Ghost Riders, have you read Jason Aaron's Ghost Rider?
Probably not. I don't think I've read Ghost Rider since the 90s, since Danny Ketch.
It's one of the best things from any comic book company
Really?
I've read in the past like decade. And I've never been a Ghost Rider guy, but someone was like, read this. And it's just grindhouse, balls to the wall, sleazy. It takes Ghost Rider in a whole different, just, it's like your ultimate Jason Aaron book in a way, especially. I don't want to really talk about it too much because there's so much that happens in it, but it brings in Danny Ketch, it brings in
Oh, nice.
demons, everything. But that's another one I really recommend.
I need to catch up. I haven't been reading the mainstream stuff for probably about the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I'm kind of going the other way now. I'm moving away from that into my more indie stuff.
Yeah.
So my
I think there's better return on your investment on the indie stuff.
Definitely. I just boycotted DC for good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, after the Batwoman thing, I was done.
For me, it was... I felt like there were a lot of anti-creator decisions being made in the wake of the New 52, so I stuck around for Grant Morrison's Action Comics, and after that, I bailed.
Yeah, that was my thing with when they sacked J.H. Williams and W. Hayden Blackman. I've been following this story since 52 through Greg Rucka and J.H. Williams and onto this one. And two issues from the end, they're going to pull the rug from under me.
Right.
So
well, I think I'd heard they did that too on Morrison's Batman Inc. That they kept him on for it, but they basically neutered a lot of the story ideas he had.
I don't know. It ended. A lot of stuff happened in it that felt big, but didn't feel important because no one was really talking about it. Like, he killed Damian. They let him kill Damian. And that's,
yeah, I heard about that.
Speaking of DC, you're a big Superman guy. A while ago, people on Tumblr were posting like pictures of their Superman shrines, like Chris Roberson and Chris Haley from Let's Be Friends Again. And then you posted yours, and it was the most beautiful sight I've ever seen.
I was just trying to end that conversation. Yeah.
Shut it down. How long have you been working on that, and what are some of your favorite items in it?
This is not even the biggest the collection ever was. About 10 years ago, I realized it was getting out of hand because I didn't quite have a room dedicated to it, but I had a room where every flat surface had a Superman thing on it. So this is the result of paring down that collection. This is all I have left. I still feel kind of bad about it.
So your it was like a episode of Seinfeld, just there's always Superman somewhere.
Except you didn't even have to like look very hard. It was just everywhere. You know, I hate, and having said all that, I made it sound like that was all there is, but they're actually my favorite Superman piece isn't on display. It's in a different corner of the room. It's right over my drawing table. Many, many moons ago, there was a Warner Brothers studio store, and they used to sell merchandise from the animated series. So I have a probably about 2, maybe 2.5 foot tall bust of Superman in the animated cartoon style with his arms crossed looking over my drawing table at all times.
Well, so he's judging you?
Yes, constantly.
It's not very Superman.
You know, it's funny you say that because although I am a boring old man now, when I first got this, you know, I was a youngster, and my friends and I were high on acid one night and came home to the apartment, and I apparently got into like a 20-minute conversation with my Superman statue. I understand later that my biggest concern was that he was judging me for doing acid.
I had a similar instance, but I was apologizing to CM Punk, who wasn't there. So you recently did a big series on Tumblr about, called The Villains of Steel, where you draw 75 Superman villains in celebration of the 75th anniversary. What was the initial spark for that? Because it was a huge undertaking.
I've always wanted to do that. I've actually... I can't remember the name of the fella, and I hate to say that, but there's a fella out there who's been drawing every Batman villain. I think he's concentrating on just the ones from World's Finest, but he's been going through it issue by issue. And every time a new villain appears, he just does a quick drawing of it. And it's been going on for a couple of years. And I've always admired that because the dedication is just intense. So I always wanted to kind of do one for Superman, especially because I love a lot of the Superman villains, just their look. And a lot of them are kind of important to me. Like Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor is one of my favorite film characters, or Mr. McJaspidelic is one of the best looking villains in my opinion. So I wanted to do it. It seemed like the 75th anniversary was a good excuse, and then doing 75, I thought, probably would make me get tired of the idea, so I wouldn't want to keep doing it forever.
So how did you decide which ones you were doing, and how much work did you put into finding them?
Surprisingly little work goes into finding them, just because I have a possibly, unfortunately, encyclopedic knowledge of Superman. But I think the only one I had to look up... I had to look up Atom Man, because I wanted to include a villain from the radio series, and I haven't heard all of those yet, so I had to go looking for a supervillain. And I had to look up The Blaze because I wanted to include someone from the comic strips, and he didn't face a lot of villains in the comic strips who were particularly visually interesting. So the Blaze was a guy in an asbestos suit who burst into flame, so I thought that was pretty good. As for picking all the other characters, I tried to get someone to represent every different media he's been in, and if possible, all the different TV shows. So you'll notice there's a villain from each one of the four movies, plus there's Feyora from Man of Steel. There's a villain from Lois and Clark. I did Tempest. I can't remember if I did a character from Smallville. I think I had to skip Smallville. But I even did the old Filmation Superman cartoon and the Ruby Spears Superman cartoon from the 80s. And I even found one from the old George Reeves show. So I tried to make sure everybody was represented at least once.
I'm just going through them again now, and I got to Mandrak, and it just gave me a little bit of a headache.
Right, I thought that was a cheap one. I feel kind of embarrassed about Mandrak.
Oh, no, I think it looks great, adding the 3D effect to it. And for a good long while, the dark side was my phone background.
Oh, I'm so pleased with that dark side. And it made me want to go back and be a little more funny with all the other ones.
So you mentioned Man of Steel.
Yeah.
What did you think of it? Because it's been a contentious issue on this podcast.
So I haven't seen it yet.
Have you not?
I have not seen it. When I saw the previews for it, it really wound me up. It looked beautiful. It seemed, I'll admit, I actually teared up once or twice watching the previews, much to my wife's amusement. She thought that was hilarious. And the previews seemed to promise that it was going to be a story about this very uplifting ideal of Superman. And then apparently it's actually a very downer story about isolation and about fear of acceptance, which I'm not against in terms of Superman, but that wouldn't have been where I started.
See, I absolutely loved it.
Really? Good.
Up until a point. And I was, because I consider myself probably the biggest Superman fan out of my friends, the people I know. When I compare myself to like yourself or Chris Robertson, I don't even chart, but Superman is... He's recently become my favourite hero over The Flash. Like, very recently, he overtook him. Because there's just something so special about Superman, and we could talk about that forever. But I loved the movie, and it did feel really uplifting. And just watching him learn to be Superman, and my enjoyment of it was going up and up and up and up and up. And then it broke my heart.
Yeah, I've heard about the ending. In fact, I heard about the ending within about 12 hours of the movie being released because people would come up to me and ask, how do you feel about Superman? Can we say it on the show?
Yeah, we've mentioned it before. I'll put a spoiler warning in the show notes as well.
Okay. So folks would say, John, you like Superman. What do you think about him killing Zod? And I'm just a little angry with people about that. But I'm not necessarily opposed to it. Like you say, I haven't seen it. But I was talking with Leonard Pierce, one of the writers on Boo, about it, and pointing out that we all accept that Superman has a code against killing, but that code has to come from somewhere. And so if it comes from deep and terrible regret over having had to kill once and a dedication to avoid killing ever again, that's fine. I'm happy to see something like that. If that's how it plays out in the movie... But when I pitched that, he suggested that that's not how it's portrayed in the movie.
It could go that way in the sequels, but the very next scene is like a playful, like a few months later, with like the government trying to track him and him destroying a satellite and be like and you don't really get any sense of regret. They could still go that way, but I'm not going to watch it.
I probably will catch it eventually. I was thinking of waiting until I imagine there's going to be a trilogy.
Yeah, well, the next one's the Batman one.
Right, with Ben Affleck. Just driving everybody to apoplectic fits. That's wonderful.
I was at Leeds Festival, like a music festival here in England, that weekend. And every time you go to a festival, there's always a rumor like someone's died, like someone beloved has died.
Right.
This rumor started going around the festival that Ben Affleck was Batman. And it's one of those things where you're like, no. It's a festival, it's a stupid festival. It's a weird one to catch on, but it's a stupid festival rumor. And then I just started getting texts and tweets and Facebook asking my opinion about it.
What is your opinion about it?
I'm not going to watch it. So,
Oh, yeah,
I
okay,
wasn't
good.
going to watch it after. Because what happened with Man of Steel, I was really enjoying it. And then when he killed Zod, I just had an intense emotional reaction. And the only way I can explain that is by saying it broke my heart. It got me in trouble on the podcast when I said it broke my heart more than my ex-girlfriend did. And some of my ex-girlfriend's friends heard
Wow. Well, she's your ex. Who cares?
that.
You're allowed to brush that off.
Like, yeah, I prioritize Superman over My Love Life, definitely.
That works for a lot of us, I'm
But
sure.
back to the Villains of Steel, which was your
Yes.
favorite one to draw, besides like the Dark Side one, which we
Yeah,
mentioned.
Darkseid was really up there. I like the first two a lot, the Mr. McJazztypalik and Doomsday. I tried to use those as my models for the rest of the series, even though about halfway through I start getting tired and you can kind of tell. Who my absolute favorite one was It, who was a whirling alien rainbow that appeared in the Silver Age, and it took me maybe six tries to draw him for this thing. Because how do you represent a whirling alien rainbow in a simple, it really was a black and white drawing that I later went in and colored. So I was really happy with how that one turned out. So I have a lot of affection for It.
Yeah, that one really stands out. The one that, going through them now, the one that really stood out that I completely forgot about was Super Menace, which is an amazing design.
Which one was that one?
Super Menace. It's just Superman, but in like a
Oh,
mech
Super
suit.
Menace. Yes. He's one of my favorite villains, just in general.
Where is Super Menace from? Because I wasn't aware of him at all until I saw your drawing
He
of him.
only ever appeared in one Silver Age story, and it is possibly it's a great story, both in that sense of just highly coincidental Silver Age weirdness, and also because if you extrapolate it even a little bit, it's one of those wonderful stories that explains all the inconsistencies or the other conveniences that are rife throughout the Silver Age. So the story is when Superman's rocket is on its way to Earth, it hits some alien thing, and that alien thing turns into a duplicate Superman rocket with a duplicate super baby inside. And it lands on Earth at the same time Superman does, only that super baby is adopted by a pair of gangsters. And they raise that super baby in secret to be a villainous Superman. So while Superboy is out there fighting crime and saving Smallville from meteors and such, Super Menace, teen Super Menace, is flying around dressed just like Superboy, looking just like Superboy, wearing a little domino mask to hide his identity, and doing things like directing crooks to go to Smallville or throwing meteors at Smallville. So when you sit there and you think, wow, it's weird that this nowhere town in the middle of Midwestern America is so often threatened by meteors and alien invasions and criminals, Super Menace answers that question by saying, well, that's because there was another super guy throwing all this stuff at Smallville just to tick off Superboy.
I'll have to track that down. That sound,
It's beautiful.
I've just started reading like proper Silver Age and Bronze Age Superman stories when my ex went to San Diego last year, and she got me Action Comics number 446, which has my favorite Silver Age moment ever, when some crooks rob a bank, literally, they rob the entire building and fly off with it,
Okay.
and Superman's reaction is, "I've heard of those guys. They were excited in Gotham." And it's not just like those guys just stole a building, it's just those building stealers.
Used to that stuff in the Silver Age or the Bronze Age.
To bring it back around, what's your favorite spooky Superman story?
Oh, there's a beautiful one, I think, from the Superman, the eponymous Superman title. Where Lois is believed to be dead. And she's actually in another dimension and ghostly haunting him. But the cover is this wonderful Kurt Swan illustration, and it's framed in such a way that it looks like a shadow box. And it's got Superman reaching his hands out to this blackened wrought iron gate on a spooky manor estate, and this green glowing specter of Lois seeming to walk out of the air towards him, and Superman screaming something like, "I'm sorry I killed you, Lois." Perry and Jimmy are looking on, pitying him loudly, just saying, "Poor Superman, he's racked with guilt." I love that one to pieces.
The first one that always comes to mind for me is Transylvania.
Transylvania is the greatest. Out of that, The Adventures of Jimmy Olsen is my favorite Jack Kirby Fourth World arc, because that seemed to be the one that was most independent of an actual arc. It's one where you could put all the weird stories. And Transylvania is transcendent. That should be... you could set a whole book on Transylvania. Just mm-hmm. Especially because now they're all cowboy vampires. After watching Oklahoma and Dracula, just forming an entire society. I suppose for your listeners who don't know what Transylvania is, which is a shame.
It's probably all should. Of it, unfortunately.
Oh, that's terrible. Would you like to summarize or shall I?
I think you could do it justice.
I'll see what I can do. Transylvania is a miniature replica world discovered by Superman and Jimmy Olsen in a mad scientist's basement, upon which tiny proto-living creatures have formed an entire culture based entirely on movies that roaming satellites have broadcast to them, specifically the old Universal horror movies. So the entire culture has developed around mummies, vampires, wolfmans, and Frankensteins. And then after two amazing issues of dealing with the Transylvania natives, Superman and Jimmy solve all their monster problems by rigging the satellites to show Oklahoma instead, implying that if you come back to Transylvania in a year, they'll all be singing, dancing cowboy vampires.
Did you mention the shape of the planet in that?
It's a planet with horns.
Yep. It's a planet with horns.
Oh, Kirby is just a delight.
I saw you excited about the artist editions.
Oh, yeah, the New Gods artist edition. I think I said that New Gods was my least favorite Fourth World book, but I'll still be buying enough to build a house out of them, because that's an amazing edition.
Yeah, I got the an inheritance a few years ago when I was just getting into comics, so I bought the big hardcover for like omnibus. My friend at my comic shop, he threw in the last one for free, so because I bought them all at once, it cost about £90, but I got all four big hardcover Fourth World omnibuy.
Omniboo, I like.
That's my friend Twig's one, Omniboo. He's really into his Omniboo.
All right, we're going to take that. Omniboo. Yeah, that was a lovely series. I ended up skipping it just so I could get the Mr. Miracles directly.
But also, speaking of spooky Superman stories, did you read the Crypto Action Comics recently? The Grant Morrison one?
The Crypto Action Comics?
It was the Halloween issue of Action Comics in the New 52 that like reintroduced Crypto.
Oh, yeah, that was the Grant Morrison one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually, I think out of the Grant Morrison issues, which I did think were a mixed bag at best, that was my favorite. That one actually, I have a dog. I love this dog beyond reason. So any story that's about how great dogs are is immediately going to touch me on some level. And then a story about Superman having the world's best dog is pretty much as good as a story is ever going to get.
It was pretty perfect, and for it to be a Halloween issue as well was because they were playing with Crypto being a ghost dog. Since the first issue, there's a homeless person that mentions it.
Yeah, I was wondering if they ever came back to that homeless person.
Don't think they did it.
It seemed like they were building something up with that character, and then
it might have been something to do with the fifth dimension, and maybe the fifth dimension.
Yeah, it could have been another imp. I wonder if you remember from, I think it was the very last arc when the final battle was going on and they finally reveal what gold kryptonite does in the New 52, which is it kills Kryptonian souls, which is very dark and very, very ominous and in a wonderful Grant Morrison kind of story element, but when they expose Crypto to gold kryptonite, and it kills his soul, and I don't remember who says it, but somebody says, it's a Kryptonian battle dog, so what, he'll grow another. Oh, God, that killed me. That was just gorgeous.
So I'm going to move on now to my one Twitter question.
Okay.
Which is from Rusty Shackles.
From Rusty, God bless.
Who is at Rusty_Shackles on Twitter. And I think I know where he's going with this. He's asked you, is it weird that whenever you compliment me, I hear it in Salieri's voice?
that's a nicely deadly compliment. Well, he's right that I'm trying to kill him, but just sort of in the way that all white Americans are trying to kill Native Americans. Is that joke going to translate overseas? Rusty, I should point out, was one of my first picks for Boo, and unfortunately, he had to bow out about 3 or 4 weeks in because of other commitments and the fact that he was just moving and buying a house and it was too much for him to be part of it. And it was just heartbreaking to me that he wasn't able to be part of it because his stuff is terrific.
Yeah, I've been a fan of Rusty's work for a long time. I was glad, if we had one question, I'm glad it was that.
It was glad it was him calling Chris jealous lunatic. I'm really hoping actually next year I can, because I'd love to do Boo again next year. And I'm hoping to get artists to do the covers the next time around. And I'm hoping to get Rusty to do one of the covers. Okay. You heard it here first.
Enthusiast exclusive. So to wrap up, because with Enthusiast, the main purpose of the core show is we talk about what we're enjoying, whether it be TV, music, games, comics, general pop culture sort of stuff. So what are you really enjoying at the moment?
Oh, golly. All right, I have to think because I get easily distracted, and whatever I'm looking at right now just becomes the thing I'm currently doing. So, book-wise, I'm actually reading a lot of old Wiz comics.
The old Captain Marvel stuff?
The old Captain Marvel, because it's all public domain, so it's free to download.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe the site I was using was goldenagecomics.co.uk, but there's another one called Digital Comics Museum, which has all of them for download. So I've been getting into those, and there's a lot of just really wonder. I mean, C.C. Beck's work right from the get-go was gorgeous, and it just got better as he was working.
Oh, I didn't know this website existed. This is amazing.
Well, you will have no end of joy with this because you'll find the old Lev Gleason Daredevils and Silver Streak and The Claw. You'll find all the neater, better standard publications. You'll find Catman. You'll find Strongman. The Owl, a lot of the characters that were relaunched by Dynamite, all of those characters are public domain, and you can find those comics over on those websites if you give them a look-see.
Well, this is my next week sorted. anything else you really enjoying at the moment?
Let's see, since Breaking Bad ended, we're trying to catch up on a bunch of shows that we've missed. So I just started Sons of Anarchy. And I'm enjoying it, but although it is striking me as I don't know if it's supposed to be funny, but I'm laughing a lot. I don't think they meant it that way. Let's see. I'm into Kolchak right now, a 1970s supernatural investigative show. It stars. It takes place in Chicago. It's about an intrepid, obnoxious reporter named Carl Kolchak who keeps managing to uncover vampires and golems. And I'm huge on, from that same era, I cannot stop watching Columbo. It's giving me no end of joy. And I guess another enthusiast exclusive for you is that I'm working with a friend on a Columbo-related project right now that I think we're probably going to debut next month.
I'll look forward to that. My dad is a big Columbo fan, so I grew up with Columbo and MASH. But I never really understood Columbo when I was a kid, so I just called him Tramp with a Badge.
He is a bit of a tramp with a badge. I like to actually, if we need a subtitle for what we do, go ahead and use Tramp with a Badge, because that's brilliant.
I like the theory that his wife doesn't actually exist. There's a whole big like fan theory about Columbo's home life that's kind of real.
I was arguing about that with the fellow I'm working on this with, because I like that idea too. I like that he doesn't have his wife. He just uses her as an excuse to investigate things more closely, but apparently it's like really bluntly he has a wife.
Oh,
they just answer the question for you, and that's a shame. I like the mystery better.
So, any comics you're reading at the moment that you'd really recommend?
I was reading, God, this is terrible. I can't remember. I had this bad habit that I tend to wait for stuff to completely come out before I read it. So I'm reading a lot of books that have been out anywhere from a year to many, many years. I just took advantage of a sale on Fantagraphics to collect all the Steve Weissman books. He's the fellow who most recently did Barack Hussein Obama, and before that was known for Yikes and all of those sort of big head, weird kid books that have been coming out for like the last 20 years. And I am reading Jeff Parker and Friends' Batman 66, and I've been reading Matt Fraction and Mike Allred's FF.
Oh, I'm really enjoying that. Fraction's just left it, but Lee Allred's taking over the writing, so it's an all Allred book now.
Oh, well, that's fine.
But I think they just announced this weekend that it's ending at issue 16.
That's a shame, because Fraction was... I think the thing I liked about it is... I almost don't care about the plot. I just love the characters he's creating so much. And then I find them also just charming. And the things like one of the Moloids being born male but deciding to identify as female, and everybody being so accepting of that, is just so rewarding to see happen.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
It was delightful, and I think they've just introduced the Impossible Man's kid, and he's obviously a child who has emotional difficulties, and again, they're dealing with that in a really rational, warm, loving way. They had a conversation about what constitutes a traditional family and the strengths of a non-traditional family, or why it doesn't matter if you're traditional or non-traditional. These are really touching things for a comic book to be addressing, particularly a superhero book from a mainstream company. I hope a lot of kids are reading this book, because I feel like it's the kind of book that would make them better adults when they grow up.
Yeah, it's also really interesting on like a craft level as well, because if you mirror the issue numbers with the original Fantastic Four issue numbers, they kind of match up, because I think it's issue 7 is where the Fantastic Four meets Stan and Jack, and in issue 7 of FF, the FF meet Matt Fraction and Tom Brevoort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd heard that they were, I don't know if they were trying to do it intentionally, but I'd heard that mentioned that was something you could track in it.
Yeah,
is that intentional?
I think so. I know Matt Fraction had a Tumblr dedicated to going back and reading those old Fantastic Fours, so he seems very, very learned.
That's fantastic. Fraction is he's a heck of a guy.
Yeah, he can't do anything wrong at the moment. He's did you read Sex Criminals?
Let's give him. I have not read that yet. No, I'm waiting for that one to get to its first arc or to wrap up, so I can read it. I kind of like reading stuff in a set instead of issue by issue.
Yeah, I think it's 6 issues. So it shouldn't be too long.
So I've been in the meantime, I'm entertained by Chip Zdarsky's constant press for it. So.
I enjoyed the pictures from the Fresh Show.
I think. I'm trying to remember who it was who described turning down an invitation to that party as "there's not enough bleach in the world." But yeah, the picture of Chip in the hot tub alone is mildly terrifying.
Okay, so I think that's going to be the show now. Where can people find you online?
Generally, I'm over at calamityjohnsave.us. Although I think probably the majority of my time I'm spending on Twitter under username calamityjohn.
Okay, and there's a Tumblr as well where you post sketches.
There's a Tumblr. There's calamityjohn.tumblr.com and calamityjohnsaveus.tumblr.com. And Save Us is where all the drawings go.
Okay, and anything to plug besides from Boo?
I do have other things coming out, but I don't think I'm allowed to mention them yet.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye out for those.
Yeah, stay tuned. I've got some comic covers and some stories coming up, and... after a long drought of not working in comics, I've gotten back in, and so I've got some stuff that'll be in comic shops soon.
Awesome. And if anyone wants to find The Enthusiast, they can just go to www.enthusiast.com. We're at Enthusiast on Twitter. Or just go to about.me/KingImpulse and all of my stuff's on there. Thank you, John Morris, for coming on the show. It's been a wonderful chat about some spooky stuff and some heroic stuff. Love to speak to you again sometime if you have more stuff to plug. Or just in general. And thank you for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Werewolf for mitzvah, spooky, scary. Wolves becoming men, men becoming wolf. Werewolf for mitzvah, spooky, scary. Wolves becoming men, men becoming wolf.
All right, that was great, Trey. Okay, it's over. That's a wrap.
Oh, the next day, what happened? The Toma didn't teach.
Oh,
I got up in front of everyone to give my little speech. Then my teeth turned into fangs and my nails into claws. And I nearly dropped the Torah when my hands turned into paws. I growled and I roared and my rabbi did as well. It was a rocking werewolf zoo at Temple Beth Emmanuel.
Hey man, where'd you learn all these Jewish words?
My manager, Harvey Lemmings. Werewolf bar mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves.
I just don't think the idea of the song can sustain itself for that long. It seems a little sweaty now, so.
This whole premise is sweaty. We had a reception at the Larchmont Country Club. They served a real nice brisket and an 8-foot party sub. I danced with my cousins, I got money from my folks. Had a lot of fun making circumcision jokes. Then I remembered the premise of my song. I was at a nice reception, but the werewolf part was gone. So we pulled ourselves together and we're wolfmen again. Just in time for monster fight to begin.
No.
All the country club employees were brain-sucking pack, who had all turned into zombies and were on the attack.
No.
So we fought them and some Draculas and Frankensteins too. Cause you gotta love bar mitzvah even if you're not a
there's no such thing as Frankensteins.
Werewolf bar mitzvah, spooky, scary.
No plural.
Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves. Werewolf bar mitzvah, kooky, hairy. Boys becoming men. Men becoming wolves. I don't want this. I don't like this. This is scary. Turning into werewolves and stuff. You know?
I don't know, Trey. I'm not feeling it. This ain't no dick in a box. Mazel tov.